Yeah, you know what I enjoy,
but he stands on the shoulders of African
American. You know what I really enjoy is when people come into the lobby here, and you sit here and go, Kid Fresh. I'm Kid Fresh. People believe it. That's the sad thing.
Hey, I want to say one more thing about Saddam Hussein. He looks like he's in pretty good shape. He's 68 years old, and he doesn't have, like, man breasts or anything like that. It looks like he might have been working out. Maybe they have, like, Cybex machines or something where he is. But he just,
probably a Club Med that he's in, right?
He looks really depressed whenever they have these pictures of him. He just looks like he's folding up his laundry. He looks like he just wants to get George Zimmer or whatever his name is on the phone. Who's the guy from Menswear?
George Zimmer.
You think about it. He just went from
George. I went to Joseph A. Banks and they sold me crap. They sold me crap, George. I hate my clothes. I fold them now. I think these look like crap. Joseph A. Banks, I hate them.
He went from being a big-time tyrant to doing his own laundry. Wouldn't you be a little upset?
Yes, I probably had like 12 prostitutes doing his laundry back in the old days.
Oh, yeah, at least.
So then the other big story is the Korean custom stem cells, which President Bush has already disclaimed.
Of course.
So if you're bringing up kids right now and you want them to grow up to be cleaning masters, don't let them use knives and forks. Give them chopsticks. We have Don in his car who wants to talk about the scantily clad Saddam Hussein.
All right, Don, hello.
How you doing?
Good.
Colin, you're a man of words more than I am. Does scantily clad apply to Saddam Hussein? Because that's what the news reporter from CBS said about him at 2 o'clock on your radio station.
He's more painfully clad, actually.
Yeah. I always thought scantily implied some degree of sensuality or sexuality, and I don't think that applies to him, does it?
Well, I got a little hot looking at those pictures.
Just speak for yourself. I'm going to leave now.
I mean, there's nothing about the word scantily that is necessarily erotic. I mean, in other words, you know, if I had pictures of a scantily clad Donald Rumsfeld, there's probably no way in which I could arrange the fabrics so that he would appear erotic, but he would be scantily clad. So I don't necessarily agree that that scanty connotes or denotes erotic import.
Well, I'd always been under the impression that that was the case, but I could be wrong about
right.
it. But it just struck me a little odd to describe Saddam Hussein that way.
Right. Well, I don't know what to say. That's almost a personal demon you may have to wrestle with. Anyway, thanks for calling.
I'll get it underway.
Yeah. He's just wearing his underpants. And he wears briefs.
I think few people realize that you are, in fact, a Jedi.
I kind of am. Let me just say something about that, too. And I'm going to be saying this to callers for weeks and weeks and weeks, because we get a lot of callers who are this way. Only a Sith thinks in absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means, but it's a line from the show. And it's, by the way, so many other things to talk about today, but we want to mention some of the guests we've got coming, too. We've got Johnny Walker, the future of American comedy. He should be here very soon. I saw him perform last night. Is he lovely?
Was he any good?
He was excellent. Yeah, he did a great show. But it was sort of a weird thing, because he was at this... What's the brewery downtown? I keep wanting to call it City Steam, but I don't think that's what it's called. Well, anyway, whatever it's called, he was at this brewery. He'll know where it is.
Are you okay?
Well, I can't think of what the name of the place was.
Hartford Steam Boiler?
No, it's not Hartford Steam Boiler.
You mean the brewery by the Gold Building?
The brewery? No, it's not that one.
Oh.
The one over by the G Fox Building. I can't think what it's called. Well, anyway, he knows where it is. And so, but here's the thing. So last night. So Johnny Walker, the future of American comedy, is performing. Now, he lives out in L.A., and he performs at, you know, the L.A. Improv and stuff like that. But he's from West Hartford originally, and his parents, he's the child of Episcopalian lawyers. Both of his parents are lawyers. You know, and they're in their mid-50s. But they're, like, inviting all their friends and stuff.
Right.
So... But he's part of a bill. First of all, you go to this place, whatever this brewery is called, and you go downstairs to the comedy room. The comedy room is down in the dungeon. And then, in packing the room, and it's not just Johnny Walker, the future of American comedy. It's like a bunch of acts, including this guy named Vinny, who, if we brought Vinny in here today, he was like sort of the MC last night, we would lose our license within 30 seconds. I mean, we would lose our FCC license. We would be fined, you know, basically for a gross domestic product of Bahrain. I think it might be called City Steam. I don't know why I didn't think it was called City Steam. But Vinny's out there, and, you know, So the room holds a few hundred people, and so there are all these like Episcopalian lawyers there in their 50s. Like his mother works for the same law firm that Jim Bergen works for. Should mean good ones. But I mean, look, and let me just assure you, by the way, that by the standards of Shipman and Goodwin, Bergen is like Ted Nugent or something. I mean, like, he would be maybe the most exciting guy there. I mean,
okay.
So, yeah. I mean, Bergen's a wild man, you know.
Well, he is kind of a wild man.
So, but then there's like also 40 drunk, horny St. Joseph College graduates there, you know, and Vinny's out there doing this material where it's like, hey, you ever fart in your car and then just close the door? And I'm looking at all these Episcopalian lawyers and their Vinny's that are going, oh, we're in hell now, aren't we? I mean, Johnny's material, and you'll hear it today, I assume it shows up after this introduction, is very, you know, I mean, he's very intellectual material. Although he wound up kind of toning it down last night and doing some of his more college-oriented material because of Vinny. But so anyway, it was loads of fun, and Johnny was very, very funny, and got lots of laughs, and it was a big success. And so we get that, and we've got the favorite blues man of Arnold Dean, Blind Strawberry Pitchell. He's coming on. He's actually not blind, though. He's deaf in one ear. But that's
a good attribute.
They thought blind sounded better, basically, in his name. And then we have Kim Martineau from Energy's Magazine. She has a kind of interesting story about sort of a world in which gender is fluid, where a person can cross the boundaries of male and female, gay and straight, and freely roam the in-betweens. I actually thought that was the description of our show. I thought maybe she'd done an article about this show. But it turns out not. Okay, we have to go.
Okay, yeah.
In the hall, there's Johnny Walker, there's Johnny Walker.
There's a guy with a count. No, what I could see was a guitar going by. There's Arnold's blues band,
Blind Strawberry Pichel is here. But Johnny Walker's not here. We just have him as a recorded entity. We don't know where he is. Yeah, we're a little concerned. He had a car that blew up yesterday. I don't know what the story is today.
We're going to be gone through another car today.
Yeah, we've got Kevin in the truck right now. We should talk to him.
Yes, we do. Kevin, hi.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Okay.
Now let me see if I have this straight. A guy gives the Audubon Society land, and then the Audubon Society does a...
I think they're turning up early because there's something dark about today. There's dark things going on at the radio station. Dark things going on.
There's evil.
There's evil here at the radio station.
I have a question. Why is our producer standing in the
box? He feels so left out. Our producer, Bobby Sherwood, who's basically a baby panda doing somersaults all day long. He's just so happy and engaged and stuff like that. But he's having car problems, so he needs to go pick up his car. So he came up to me in the hall. And in a moment, it's like one of those sort of all about Eve kind of moments. So I hate to do this, but I have to go pick up my car. And so Mikey C., the producer of the Buddy Lester show, will be producing the first hour of the show. And I said, well, why do you say you hate to do this? Don't feel like you hate to do it to us. Because we enjoy having Mikey C. Produce our show.
It doesn't miss a beat.
It's a nice little change of pace.
He gets a chance to be treated like a human being.
In the sunlight a little bit, instead of being locked up like a veal calf and, beaten. And so it's a win-win all around. And maybe Bobby needs to get out of the office and deal with his car situation, and that's fine, too. I don't have a problem with any of that.
We feel great about that. You should have heard him earlier today, though.
Right.
He was trying to figure out who he could get a ride with tonight. And I said, I can't. He has to stay here till 7. So I said, I can't take you tonight because I have to pick my son up right after the show.
And I said, I can't take you tonight because I don't want to.
But that's it. See, I said to him, I said, well, why don't you ask Colin to give you a ride? He said, he wouldn't give me a ride.
No, I wouldn't.
Nobody would give me a ride.
Absolutely
not. I said, well, if you ask Nice and he happened to be going that way, he might give
you a ride. Not that I was really busy, but I don't want to.
I see. All right. Yeah, well, at least you're honest.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to either, but I had an excuse tonight, so it worked out good for me.
I wouldn't even bother to think up an excuse, I don't think.
All right, back to the evil.
Okay, back to the evil here at the station. Well, basically, what happened, as I'm piecing things together, as far as I can tell, Roy and Debbie, the beloved morning show
duo
of this radio station, and they are beloved by all of people in Connecticut and beyond.
Absolutely. By some than others.
Yeah, but by and large, they are beloved.
Yeah.
They're very well thought of. It's not like this show where we fly the Jolly Roger. You know, I mean, people either like that or they don't. But this is the pirate show.
Right.
But they're not like that. They try to be balanced. I mean, Roy is a reactionary nut, and Debbie kind of somewhere around the center. And it kind of works out. But, they're beloved.
Sort of like here.
They're beloved, and they talk about, little costumes you can make for bees and stuff like that. And people like things like that. So,
that's necessarily a good way to start.
But today, by accident, they booked a Sith Lord onto the show. And so I tuned in late. And so I'm driving along in my car, and I hear this caller named Phil, and he comes on the show, and he says, well, I don't think it's so great to have somebody on. Journalistically, I question why you would have somebody who works with Tomasa and saying bad stuff about Attorney General Blumenthal when there's no proof of any of this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm listening and thinking, boy, did I ever miss a great show. So then I had to pull my car into a garage and I lost the signal, ran up to my apartment, turned on the radio, and Blumenthal is on, and he is pissed. I've never heard him so pissed. I mean, usually, he doesn't ever get mad about anything. And he's really mad. And as I piece it all together, here's what I understand to have happened. This attorney from Washington, D.C., not a person of our state, an attorney from Washington, D.C., named Jack Fornaciari. So he issued this statement criticizing Attorney General Blumenthal. Kind of odd that a Washington, D.C.-based lawyer would have any particular care one way or another about Attorney General Blumenthal. They're basically claiming that the Blumenthal has been reluctant to provide the documentation about how outside law firms are contracted to handle state business. In particular, the statement cites the tobacco settlement. And he claims that Blumenthal's stonewalling and hasn't made the documents available and stuff like that. So Blumenthal's out, and I didn't hear all Blumenthal's interview, but he's clearly ripped about this, and Blumenthal doesn't really get ripped about anything. At least he doesn't show it. He's really mad, and he said there's no substance to this, and that this guy had apparently suggested that Blumenthal's wife works for one of the law firms in question, and Blumenthal said, perhaps to her credit, my wife has never worked for any law firm, and blah, 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 blah. So I still couldn't quite understand what was going on. I do want to say this is not the first time Blumenthal has had to answer questions about this, and I do know a little bit about this, and I will just tell you what I understand to be the case about the hiring of David Golub and his law firm which was, and they were, Blumenthal and Golub were at one of the time professionally connected. But here's the first thing you should know about David Golub. David Golub, if you asked 100 lawyers in the state of Connecticut, who besides them, 100 of the top lawyers in Connecticut, who besides them is the smartest lawyer in Connecticut? Probably about 85 of them would say Golub. And let me put it another way. The day that I'm arrested for beating Helmecki to death with a tube sock full of wood screws, I'll call Steve Seligman. In other words, if I'm up on homicide charges for killing Helmecki, I'll call Seligman. I'll be guilty, too, but I'm guessing that if we have any video or anything of Helmecki, no jury will convict me.
You say no one.
Yeah, if they can sort of get a sense of what he was like in life.
Jury nullification. That is bad.
I think they would just say, this would be one of those records with the common laws of homicide that we don't apply. But anyway, I would call Seligman for that. Now, the day that I'm terminated here by this radio station, I will call David Golub.
This is coming closer every single day.
I will call David Golub, and if Golub takes my case, within 2 years, I will own Sal Haney's house. And his kids, Chip and Ernie, will spend their high school years washing my car. I mean, if Golub takes my case...
it does have an appealing ring to it.
If Golub takes my case, some of the rich owner wind up giving my own, giving me, you know, my own show on MTV, if I, that's what I want. Golub is like a really, really a good lawyer. So the idea anyway that, you know, they did a Golub handling this thing. The other thing that I understand to be the case is that this the tobacco case was offered to all kinds of litigating law firms in Connecticut, most of which regarded it as a this huge resource consuming whirlpool that would just pull them down. They didn't want any part of it. I think one of the law firms that passed on it was, interestingly enough, Carmody and Torrance, which is the law firm of James Robinson, the famous guy. This is the law firm that famously gave John Rowland all the free legal services. Anyway, I think they were offered this thing and they didn't want it. But I mean, a lot of law firms looked at it, passed on it. Nobody wanted to do it. I don't even think people at Golub's law firm wanted to do it. They just, but Golub is one of these guys, just in the same case, he famously handled Janet Peckinpah's case, which a lot of people weren't sure had legs, and he said, oh, no, I could win this, and he won it. And in the case of the tobacco settlement, really nobody thought this was a winner, and everybody thought it was a case that would just bring down your law firm, because it was so vast. It was a huge undertaking, and Golub won the case. So, anyway, the idea that Blumenthal steered this to Golub is complete crap. I would stake my reputation on it. I mean, the Blumenthal did anything unethical or anything like that. And so he's right to be mad. But more to the point, this guy, Jack Fornaciari, what he's basically doing is representing the Tomasos. He's a lawyer for the Tomasos. So that's why he's interested in making Blumenthal's life miserable. Not that he's a citizen of Connecticut and he cares what the Attorney General does with no, nothing like that. He's representing the Tomasos. He's a lawyer for the Tomasos in their current woes, their current corruption-related woes. This guy, Fornaciari, also, and I believe, actually, that my good friend, Andy Tebow, was one of the people who helped get him on the air here. And, you know, Andy is, like, dressing up as a bear and going through people's garbage and stuff. This guy. No, Andy's like a private detective or something, which I still don't quite. I can't wrap my mind around this idea.
I can't wrap my mind around dressing up like a bear.
Yeah, I mean, really, he's like, you know, putting on a moose suit and following Christine Regalia around or something. You know, and he's dressing up as a dog and pawing around and, you know, blowing all of those garbage and stuff. I mean, you know, so
dressing up his lawn.
Who's, you know, the world's craziest private detective is working for this guy, Fornaciari, to basically, they're conducting surveillance on cooperating witnesses, people who are actually cooperating with the federal and state investigations into the Tomasos. So, if I were Blumenthal, I'd be pretty ticked off about all this stuff. I mean, I just want to say on behalf of our show that we will never do that to Blumenthal. We will make fun of his personality. We will make fun of how boring he is. We'll make fun of the fact that he's basically Allie McBlumenthal because he has an eating disorder, that he's emaciated and weird. What are some other things we make fun of? Like I said, he's just, you know, desperate for media attention. Although when he gets it, he's really not particularly interesting. Anything else about
that? I
can
say that.
Hey, we make fun of him for all those things. But, I mean, I personally don't believe that there's anything inappropriate about his, you know, handing out of this legal work. And my guess is that he probably bent over backwards to do it in a way that, you know, actually citizens of this state should be damn glad they have him.
Yeah.
Well, I think Blumenthal's basically a good attorney general. He's not as good as Elliot Spitzer.
I only said that
because I know that by now some aide would be at the radio and, you know,
be a guest on this show in a minute.
Playing in his office, you know, and I just said that to upset him because I knew that he would be clutching his chest and rolling around on the floor. But, I think Blumenthal's a very good, very worthy attorney general, and I would agree with you that he served this state nobly by and large.
Think of the things that might be happening here if it weren't for him.
He's freaking laughy. He runs around making sure, you know, we don't die in the ravine every day. And I think he does a very good job, and I'm sorry. And if there's anything that we can do to repair the rift that the Roy and Debbie show has caused with this fine public servant,
Perhaps we should have him on.
Having a Sith Lord come on today and publicly berate him for matters in which, in my personal opinion, he is blameless, we would certainly do that. Anything we could do to pay, well, you know, short of actually letting him be on the air and kill our ratings. But anything that we could do above and beyond that, I'd like to do that. I'd like us to be the peacemakers here. I'd like to be the brokers of harmony.
God knows we have the experience for that.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the right role for us here. Mm. I'd like us to be the
fans. Stir up the
Warren Christophers, you know, who go in here, the Jimmy Carters who go in the whole free elections. So if there's any way that we can, because clearly Blumenthal is just ripped. He is just steamed at Roy and Duddy for taking this, for laying this cheap shot on his good reputation habit on their show. So if there's anything that we could do, if there's anything we could do,
because
I have nothing but respect for them as broadcasters. I think they are, as I say, they are beloved.
This is going to be really, really nasty.
So out of character for them.
Really bad.
To put themselves in this dreadful position vis-a-vis Blumenthal, and we're very fond of Blumenthal in kind of a patronizing way. So if there's anything we can do, we certainly do it.
The WTIC News Watch. Never stop. Here's a good start right here. The Vermont Teddy Bear for the Attorney General.
Right. We sent him a, he probably doesn't know how to say that, but we sent him a sort of, I'm sorry, our station booked some slimy lawyer on to,
they got a bear for that.
Yeah. I'm sure they have.
They've got over 100 bears. I'm sure they have one of those.
Bear carrying a briefcase.
Exactly. We can do it. If he can't accept it, he can donate it to charity.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to give the graduation gift that your high school or college grad will keep forever, you send them a Vermont Teddy Bear. Not the, what did you call it again, the slimy lawyer?
Well, let's say slick lawyer.
Oh,
slick.
That slimy is an overstatement. All right, and just call the Bear Counselor, 800-829-BEAR, and they'll help you choose the perfect bear. You get the gourmet caramels, you get a gift card, and that famous gift box with an air hole. Ask about the graduation bear.
Oh, book some air hole on.
Grad cap and gown in your choice of five colors. You can add their name and degree to the gown and get class of 2005 in the cap. Vermont Teddy Bear has over 100 bears for every occasion. Birthday suit bear, get well, new baby bears, lawyer bears, whatever kind of bears. It's as easy as sending flowers. Vermont Teddy Bears are the only bears made, handmade actually, in America. And they're guaranteed for life. Overnight and Saturday delivery is guaranteed. Call them 800-829-BEAR or shop online at VermontTeddyBear.com. 800-829-BEAR. That I can name a few.
And so, and I think people like New York, I mean, House has no emotions except crankiness, basically. I mean, the whole idea of tonight's episode is we might actually see House's emotions for the first time, but all he ever is crankiness.
And then just the episode where he
comes back and she's his
he's treating his ex-wife's husband or flame or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, I'm 24. Well, first of all, Jack Bauer himself is really not very emotional. But then there's also Edgar and Chloe, they're like this kind of, they're like me. They're kind of like borderline Asperger characters.
Borderline what?
Asperger syndrome. It's sort of a...
I know.
You know, it's on the autism spectrum, but and people often think that
just
I have.
Sometimes when you say things like that, I think it's necessary to explain it so that somebody doesn't misunderstand.
And people often think that I have it. But anyway, and Edgar and Chloe, and they're like the rustics in Midsummer Night's Dream. They're having their own little sort of play within a play. And then I thought of somebody else who's like that, too. I mean, it just seems like these sort of unemotional characters are increasingly glamorized, or characters who are really good at tamping down their emotions. I mean, there have always been a few of them, like Spock and stuff like that. Star Trek always had at least one person. But I think it's increasingly the case that they're...
We're using Star Trek as a model now?
I think Star Trek is a great model. I've always said that. Star Trek is a great model for understanding...
Let us remember some of the people who've called this show in the past who have been aficionados of Star Trek.
I never did any attention after The Next Generation, but I always claimed that Star Trek The Next Generation is where you wished you worked. I mean, the boss and Captain Picard is like this incredibly level-headed person, and everybody on the show is pretty accepting of everybody else.
He yelled a lot, though.
He didn't really yell that much.
He didn't,
at all.
He did.
And there's a lot of diversity, and everybody kind of accepts everybody's diversity, and nobody's particularly judgmental. Everybody's open to everybody else's ideas and stuff like that. It just seems like this great place to work. Star Trek, the first generation.
Fictional.
Yeah. Star Trek, the first generation is where you do work. That's where you actually do work. The boss is sexually out of control. He's aggressive.
He understands almost no way of responding to any situation except either to punch somebody or screw some woman. I mean, that's just two, like, major responses to them.
Well,
then there's, like, this human resources guy who's completely out of touch with his emotions. He's inaccessible to anybody. Then the tech people are led by Scotty, who's a liar. Just like, I don't know, certain other tech people I could name. You know,
yeah.
Somebody who, like, tells you that things can't possibly be done when you know for a fact they can. You say to him, he's like, Scotty, would it be possible to turn on the Enterprise's headlights and back off at the same time? I did that basic thing, the stress, Captain. You know, and just, like, basic things, the answer is no. And on and on. I mean, it's...
Surely Finland.
You are covering the same story Matt was covering.
Yeah. We're all covering it together.
Yeah.
Part of America's news corps. You know what's really weird? You know what's a bad thing about me, I would say, is that my...
You only have 3 hours.
Yeah,
so
well, yeah, this is one bad thing.
Okay.
I actually may discuss many bad things about myself today, now that you mention it, but this is how my profile has fallen, which is... Last night, I went to this protest. The protest was... It was people protesting...
People
who are protesting the immigrants. But I also went to I went to both groups. I visited with both groups. Chatted. I met Paul Streit, the guy.
Did you?
The native.
I bet that was the thrill of his day.
The crypto nativist guy. Yeah. Well, I walked up to him and I said, I only wanted to just interview about Shakespeare, because I happen to know that his other big thing is he's an expert in the idea that Shakespeare didn't write Shakespeare's plays.
Right.
So.
Who did write them?
Mexican workers.
Mexican workers wrote.
They wrote Winter's Tale, some of the later plays, I think. And the earlier plays were written by Indonesian factory workers making 50 cents an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Did a bang-up job.
Make of that what you will.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was there with my notebook, taking notes, interviewing people. And every time, like, somebody like Tom Swine from CCAG or somebody would walk by, I go, he's got a notebook. Look at that. I spent 20 years of my life walking around with a notebook taking notes. But now it's kind of like, you know, like Shelley Sinlin was making fun of me too, saying, "Oh, do you know how to do this? Do you need any help?" You know. And I spent pretty much my entire adult life walking around with a notebook, asking people questions, stupid questions for the most part, and jotting down the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And now people are making fun of me.
Why don't you work with a disc machine or a tape?
I don't know how those work.
Tape deck.
I'm an old-fashioned shoe leather journalist. Anyway.
Well, you can still be a shoe leather journalist. You still ask the same questions. You get the same answers. You just have to transcribe it.
Yeah, that's the problem. You have to go through the damn tape and everything like that. Meanwhile, also, the good thing about a notebook is people say stuff, and then I write down whatever I want them to, or said, you know, I don't actually know what they did say.
Basically make stuff up.
With a tape machine, you're pretty much stuck with their actual words. So
that would be a problem.
Another big drawback. But anyway, they were sneering at me as though it was some kind of anomaly to see me.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because you've done nothing in your life recently that would ever cause anybody to sneer.
No,
at
I
you.
Understand I had it coming. I get that. So later on the show today, I want to explain why, as far as I'm concerned, I am House, except not Dennis House, but to Dr.
Right.
Jeffrey House, or whatever his name is.
The other House that got thrown out of the Red Sox game.
Yeah, not that House. Yeah. I'm the doctor. I'm without the limp, without the cane, without the pill problem. But I'm in all the other respects.
See, it is too bad, actually, that most people know you for this persona on the radio, which is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, is great, but a lot of people would find it, you know, a little shaky and mildly annoying. But behind all of that, I mean, as you say, for 20 years, I mean, you were a very accomplished journalist and
writer.
Well,
let's take it away here.
Well, no, I'm just telling you, this is my take on it. Very accomplished newspaper columnist, humorist, and, you know, a magazine writer, and author, and great father. I mean, it's just, these are all things that people don't know.
Yeah.
And they don't give you credit for that.
There's no reason why they do.
Because they don't look past the radio foolishness.
Well, the radio...
Okay.
You stir up interest, certainly.
Stir up interest.
Stir up interest. Get people excited about this.
So we hadn't heard from CYS Short Concerto competition winner Nathaniel Yaffe about where he actually goes to school. Where do you go to school?
I'm a senior at Conard High School.
Oh, okay. That's where my son goes. But, well, probably the kind of kids that Satan would be in the home. But he's in fact not all that dangerous. I don't think so. Okay, so, and this really is a great thing, and these kids are really, really talented. It's so much fun to watch, to listen to them play, even just during rehearsals, you know, during the breaks. Some of the tall jazz guys, you know, suddenly started jamming and stuff like that. It's just it's fun to sit around there during intermission and see what they're going to do. I looked at it, and I don't have Tchaikovsky's fourth, but we do have Francesca de Rimini, and the reason we have Francesca is true, is that a friend of mine,